Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your host for today is Susan Franzen.
Thanks, Mike. And our other hosts are not in the room yet, so I want to welcome you, especially from all of us. And we have a very, very special group of guests waiting right now. We decided that after several articles in Facets and in the Story City Herald, that we would do a memorial program. As you know, of course, all of you who have friends and relatives die in the last 6 months, in-person memorial services are not happening. We are waiting. And so I thought this would be a good one to bring us all together because Dr. Frances Bartlett Kinney, who died on Mother's Day 2020 at the age of 102, was well known in Story City, although her home was Florida at the time of her death. And she was the occasion for articles because she had given four checks of $20,000 each to institutions in Story City: the Bertha Bartlett Public Library, the Historical Society, the schools, and the city. It was the financial gifts that led to the articles, but both of the articles stressed her lifelong active interest in her hometown. And so I would like to introduce the guests that we have with us. We have the mayor, Mike Jensen. We have the executive director of the Bertha Bartlett Public Library, Colleen Taylor. And we have the director of the Story City Historical Society, Kate File. And I know that you were all in regular contact with Fran right up to the end. Colleen, do you have a message from Fran?
Oh, well, I'm on the list of people that feels like every time I open my email and I accidentally stumble on an email from her, I stop and read it again thinking, okay, maybe she's trying to emphasize something. And I don't know. Fran was never brief, so I don't know that I could, but she's tried to make sure that she communicated with us regularly. And I know that Mike has a lifelong knowledge of how Fran communicated so well with everyone. But she always seemed to start off saying, I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you and the board, making sure that the staff knows that they're doing a good job. She spent a lot of time making sure that we were built up, not knowing what was going on in the community, making sure that we had positive messages coming from her to reinforce everything that we were trying to do. And the last letter that she sent to me, she did that once again. She was thinking about things that her moms and her references were, well, between Kate and you need to work out. I've got some more items I think that should come to one of you, and I don't know which one it should go to in honor of her mom. So she was constantly thinking about what's the next step, what else do I need to be doing. But this at the very end, she says, this all is the beginning of some things I want to check with you all, and I shall call. At any rate, I do hope you've been able to get some rest with your schedule. It's so important to keep your health. And this is right before COVID started, but she always signed Love, Fran. So she kind of endeared herself to make sure that we all were taking care of ourselves, making sure that we kept our attitude up. And this is, like I said, just before the COVID situation got really out of control in the Midwest. But it is definitely, she was constantly thinking about us. And that was very evident in every single communication, whether it was about making reference to the city, to Mike, to the parks, to the Historical Society, the schools, the kids. She was interested in it all.
I think maybe, since you've been talking about the library, not only was this named for her mother, Bertha Bartlett, but what other active part did she take in the library?
when the fundraising was, she was the one that the co, she was the honorary chairperson of the entire fundraising campaign for the both the construction of the top of the library back in 1994. So she was, she from afar, she was raising money to help us even before I was here, trying to put her fingers in where they need to be. And it was very hard to say no to Fran. I can tell you that. And I'm sure Mike can tell you the same thing.
Yeah, that's for sure.
If Fran asked you, you didn't want to say no. Or I'm not even, Mike, did you ever say no?
Well, you try, but you never got by with that with Fran. She always had a way of coming back and make you do what she wanted you to do. And it's always in such a nice way, you could just never turn Fran down. I think anybody that met her felt that way too. But I remember when I was on the council when they were trying to add on another room to the library, and she put up the money for that addition on that, even after it was just getting started to be built.
And since you're the next person who's to speak, why, I was told that whenever she came to Iowa on her annual visits, that you gave her a ride from the airport.
Yeah, I always enjoyed picking her up and taking her back a lot of the times. And we had an hour about the visit, and we could visit about anything, you know, just the two of us. And my wife probably came along most of the time, and Willie McDuffie that made it possible for her to come back these last few years. And he graduated from Jacksonville University. Fran had recruited him, and then he went on to play basketball, pro basketball, after he finished playing for Jacksonville. So yeah, it was a great time just driving her back and forth from the airport. And then her last few years, we called about every Sunday night. One of us called the other one and kind of updated her on what was going on in Story City, keep her in touch. And she really enjoyed that. Some of the conversations got rather long, so there's some long telephone calls, but always appreciated it. And my granddaughter, Savannah, when she was about 7 years old, her and Fran started emailing back and forth, and that was quite an experience for her. And I know her and Fran had some great talks too over the last couple of years of her life. So,
well, how did she get around when she was in Story City?
Well, she's like the Energizer Bunny. She went wherever she wanted, whenever she wanted. And Willie McDuffie made it possible the last couple of years, but she'd call me and tell me when she was coming to Story City, and I'd go out to Gookin Ford and arrange a car for her. And when she got here, well, then she had a vehicle to use. And the first few years, she was doing the driving, and then when it got harder for her, Willie had come along and he'd drive. Of course, we had to get a bigger vehicle then because he's so tall. But she could get wherever she wanted, and somebody would get her there.
Before we go to the details of what she did after she left Story City, I think we should give Kate Fyle a chance to tell about the Historical Society. I believe she was quite instrumental in the, well, even the buildings you got. Would you tell about how this all came about?
Sure. Fran was a big donor for the Historical Society. Back in the middle 1990s, Cheryl Eddy was our board president, and she's a real estate agent here in town. In our current, what we call the Bartlett Museum, the house was for sale, and it's a kind of a unique house. It's one of the best designs in town for a Queen Anne style home, and they hadn't done much work to the inside, so it still kind of had the same layout of what a traditional Queen Anne style house would look like. And so Cheryl actually went and, you know, contacted Fran and see if what her thoughts were and, you know, what she could do to help us out with that. And Fran actually donated the money in order for us to purchase the home to turn into a museum. So she's always been kind of involved in the Historical Society, for sure since the 1990s. And then, even since we had the house and we're doing, you know, renovations on that to get it ready to be a museum. I think there was already kind of talks in the work about, you know, what else that they can do. So a few years later, they were already, you know, working on fundraising to build our carriage house museum, which was built in 2008. And Fran, again, was instrumental in that and donated money for that project as well. So we really wouldn't have what we've got in Story City as far as museums go without Fran and her support.
This was her family home, right?
It is not. There's a little confusion about that. She wanted it named in honor of the Bartlett family and her parents, so that's why we call it the Bartlett Museum. It was the home of Henry Torkel Henryson, who was a banker at the time when it was built in 1903. And his father was Torkel Henryson, who was the one who brought the first group of Norwegian immigrants to Story City. So that's why we wanted the home and to be able to tell that story. But everybody assumed, since we call it the Bartlett Museum, that it was Fran's home. But Fran, actually, their house used to be kind of where the library is now in town. So, people get confused all the time about that. But it's a fun story because we get to tell, anytime anybody asks, you tell more about Fran, and you get to talk about the Norwegian immigrant story, too. So,
Well, but we haven't talked about who her parents were. Her father was the editor. Well, maybe I should ask you to tell who her parents were.
Sure, yeah. So Charles Bartlett was the editor of the Story City Herald, and they actually, and his wife was Bertha. They lived above the Herald at one point, which I think we're going to hopefully later show a clip of her playing Fran playing her piano. But that was her mother's piano, and that was actually above the Herald office on the second floor up there. So they had to get that piano up and in there and then back out when they moved. Yeah, but Bertha, she was instrumental in starting the library here in town. She started, I want to say, in 1927, Colleen?
She wasn't there then, but she was involved with it. So there was a bunch of volunteers that started the first library, and I think her husband and she, they were participants, but she was the first full-time librarian. So there's about five ladies that went together, and they collected books in the community to get started.
But then Bertha was a librarian for like 40 some years after that. So she was a big...
I think it was 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a long time, yeah.
When I grew up, she was a librarian all through my lifetime, pretty much. And she would help everybody get the books she thought they needed. So,
yeah, I've heard stories where she'd see people walking by the library out of the street, and she'd bring them in and give them a book and tell them what they needed. And yeah.
The younger kids, she kind of guided them to where she thought they would like to be. And, like one of the boys that she worked with was Barry Benson. Mm-hmm. And Barry Benson did a lot of the editing in her book, The President Wears a Skirt.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting.
Okay, well, now you're getting into the part of the story about what Fran did after she left Story City. Actually, it started already when she was very little, and the piano is pretty central to that.
Kate Vile, director of the Story City Historical Society, sent me a sound clip of Fran playing her mother's piano and telling the story of how they moved it to their home above the offices of the Story City Herald.
This is what she was playing.
Thank you. And I screwed up at the piano. And this is what I did.
Kate File, director of the Story City Historical Society, told me she made sure to have it tuned each year so that when Dr. Kinney came to Story City on her annual visits, it would be ready for her. The selection you heard was from one of those visits.
She started playing piano when she was 3 or 4, just started picking things out. And by 11, she was giving piano lessons. And so when she was time for her to go to school, she went to Drake and she was in music education. And she she taught music for a while, and she got a master's degree from Drake in music. But when World War II came, she was eager to put her wit and talents to good use for her country. She signed up to be a U.S. Army hostess at Camp Crowder in Missouri, where she was in charge of providing entertainment for as many as 70,000 GIs. And there she met Colonel Henry L. Kinney, and they were married in 1948. Then she learned in to fit in with post-war communities and cultures throughout the world, and she rejected the privileged American officers and diplomats who lived among them. In 1957, she graduated from the University of Frankfurt in West Germany with a PhD in music, English literature, and philosophy. After successfully completing an oral defense of her dissertation in German.
But I'd like to fill out this tribute with an obituary from the Florida Times Union, which tells a story of Fran Kinney few people in Story City knew.
In 1958, Fran came to Jacksonville University as assistant professor of humanities for a one-month teaching assignment and found her home. For 62 years, she invested her time, talent, and treasure to enrich the university and the local community. Her leadership, persistence, and unquenchable optimism shaped Jacksonville University into what it is today. As a professor in 1960, she founded what is now the Linda Barry Stein College of Fine Arts, and in 1969, she was appointed to its dean. She went on to serve as president of Jacksonville University from 1979 to 89 and established what is now the Davis College of Business and the Kiwin School of Nursing and the Aviation Program. Fran was the first woman in the world to be named dean of a college, the first American woman to earn a doctorate at the University of Frankfurt, the first female university president in Florida, the first chancellor of Jacksonville University, and was inducted into the Florida Women's Hall of Fame. Though the first were many, Fran never boasted of the glass ceiling she managed to shatter. She was ever gracious, kind, humble, and quick to encourage others. I think we've already seen that. She believed there was no greater purpose than saying to others, and like to often say, life isn't about me, it's about others. Apparently, another thing she was known for, according to Paul Grissom, was when she would meet people in Florida or wherever she went, she would tell them about Story City. And so she was an ambassador for Story City. Her buoyant spirit was infectious, her determination inspiring, and she wrung every drop of joy out of life. In the words of her lifelong friend, Bob Hope, who I imagine she met when entertaining troops, when you're around Fran, things happen. He was one of the many world-famous entertainers and renowned figures Fran attracted to visit Jacksonville, along with Gerald Ford, Jack Benny, Charlton Heston, Duke Ellington, Linus Pauling, Margaret Mead, and the Boston Pops Orchestra conductor, Arthur Fiedler. She even convinced George Steinbrenner to bring his New York Yankees baseball team to play an exhibition game against the Dolphins to raise funds for the university. And in one of the articles I saw, there was a picture of Fran in academic robe, apparently about to award honorary doctorates to Bob Hope and Jack Benny. And
there's a reason she wrote an entire book. She needed it. It doesn't even scrape the surface as to what I think the impact she had. And I think if you, I know Kate and I probably both still have copies. She did an update on her book a few years back, and we all have copies of it. But if you haven't read it from front to back, it's full of things you had no idea that she did. An enormous treasury of the little things and the big things that she experienced in her life. and that made an impact on not only her view of the world, but also her view of Story City and her view on how other people should be living their lives, I guess. It's the best way I can think of, because she seemed to bring it all together and had lots of lessons for all of us.
She couldn't get it all in one book. She wrote another one, The Final Chapter. You've got that one too, don't you, Colleen? And Kate too, I'm sure. But it's like when we went down to visit her, her bedroom, they were kind of in the back of the house, and there's a long hallway between those bedrooms. And on those walls are a million pictures of several U.S. presidents, all the people that you just talked about, Bob Hope, Jack Benny, and many, many other dignitaries. And it was just like walking back through a history, going through her walls there in the between the bedroom and the living room. I know when I was in the Navy, I was stationed at Mayport, Florida, which is right by Jacksonville, and the Blue Angels flew out of there. Well, Fran knew all those Blue Angels personally, and there's several pictures in the book of her with the Blue Angels, so... everybody in Jacksonville knew Fran. I mean, everywhere you went, whether you went to a restaurant or you went to the cop, wherever, everybody knew Fran. And I think that's the way wherever she was in the world. She influenced a lot of people.
And she made people that she met feel like the most important person in the room, no matter who they were, no matter what their economic status was, no matter how important they were. She made them all feel very special. Every time I introduced an employee to her, she spent a serious amount of time getting to know them, learning their names, finding out about their families, and everyone walked away feeling like they just met their new best friend. She just had that way of charming everyone.
An example of that, Colleen, is when I picked her up at the airport the last time she was here. Of course, she was in a wheelchair, and I got off the airplane at the landing there, and Willie would usually bring her wheelchair down, and we'd go to the baggage and claim her bags. But there was an elderly gentleman that worked for the airline that brought her down this time. And by the time they got from where she unloaded off the airplane to the baggage, she knew everything about him, and they were the best of friends. It's just amazing how she can contact people for it, and she just gets every bit of information out of them in a short period of time, and she does it in a way that it's just friendly and easy to do. That was Fran. Everybody that she visited with, you were the important one in her conversation. That's the way she lived her life, putting everybody else first.
There was another gift earlier this year that she gave to the city that was not listed in these four. Mike, you want to talk about that?
Well, there's several things that she's given to the city besides the $200,000 check. We had a 1936 bridge built by the WPA, and it was there since 1936. And just so happened that we had the weather conditions where there was a lot of ice in the river, and then it rained a lot. So the water raised the ice up, and it took out the bridge, totally destroyed the deck on that bridge. And it was going to cost about $180,000 to repair that bridge, but it's a landmark to our community. And so the council made the decision we were going to do it, whatever it cost, we were going to replace it. Well, when Fran heard about this, she called me and said, I want to pay for that. I said, Fran, you're not paying for that. We've got insurance company's going to pay for some of that. Well, I want to pay for, you tell me what they don't pay, I'll pay that. And I said, there's no need, Fran. I said, we've got money here in the city too, and there'll be a fund drive if we need more. I said, why don't you just pay a dollar for every year of your age? And then she laughed and no, I'm going to do more than that. Well, she ended up putting $40,000 towards the repair of that bridge. And before that, several years back from that, we did a restoration of the bridge and had it re-tuck pointed. Well, she donated to that also. And on that bridge, there's a plaque with her picture telling about the two things that she did for the bridge. And that was very important to the community. That's a real landmark, and her picture's on there now and tells about it. So her name's all over Story City, whether it's in the library or downtown or the or Kate's buildings, you know, that all the museums that they've got. One of the museums is our old water plant, and they've turned that into a museum. And there's history of Fran everywhere you go. She was part of Story City, and she is going to be forever. She came back and was buried there in Story City with her husband. So she's back home.
I don't think we'll ever feel like she's completely gone from Story City. Every once in a while I find a note in my drawer, and it's like, oh, Fran, how did you get this one in my hands today? So she was constantly putting little notes everywhere, and seemed to know how to make sure you kept involved and quit thinking about her.
One of the things that I think Paula would be able to tell us about, because we didn't have a representative from those schools, was her active participation in school life. I understood. Does anyone know about that?
I know that she has a scholarship.
Right, yeah, there's a scholarship, and she's had a scholarship there for a number of years.
Yes.
I think, from what I've heard, she would always, whoever was receiving the scholarship, like, she'd always try to get to know them and interact with them, too. So, I mean, like, even though she wasn't in Iowa that much, she would still, you know, at least try to know what was going on with the things that she was supporting here in the community.
When she'd come back to Story City, she'd try to get that person that got the scholarship and sit down and have a visit with them if she could, and if they were still around, I know. But she just supported about everything we did in Story City, whether it was the Historical Society, the library, or a city project. I remember when we finished the restoration of the South Park in Story City, and she came back, I want to see that. Well, she was in a wheelchair, so what I did, I lined up a couple of golf carts, and we took her all through the bike path, down across the river and back through the South Park, and she just thought that was the best thing to be able to do that. She just appreciates everything that happens in her hometown. I always thought when she passed away that I could just see her standing at Heaven's Gate arguing with St. Peter. I got to go back. I've got too much unfinished work. That sounds just to me like what Fran would be doing. She just never got all her work done. But she told me once she was on 40 different boards, and a lot of those were college boards. And I know Drake University was one of them. And she was still on that board when she passed away. And she did a lot of that by phone call or video conference. And I said, Fran, you got to give up some of those. You got to enjoy it. I enjoy them all, but I can't, and I should give them up, but I can't. And that was just the way she lived her life. Just like the Energizer Bunny, like I said before. I know Willie, at the end of the day, he was tired just following her around, and most of us would be.
Who wasn't? I mean, she used us all. She would go from my board meeting to Kate's board meeting, go out to dinner, she'd have a family thing all in one day, and I'd go home exhausted. She'd still be going.
So. And if you were out with her for that evening meal, she was planning where you were going to eat lunch the next day or breakfast. That's just the way she lived her life.
Well, our closing for this was going to be, and is going to be, a little clip of Fran playing the piano, which I gather you, Kate, you always managed to make sure that it was tuned when she came to town, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we got her piano tuned once a year. It's an over 100-year-old piano now. So we always at least try to keep it tuned once a year for her, because that's what she always wanted to do if she could, if it was possible. When she came back to town, she'd always try to come into the Bartlett Museum where we've had it since like 2000, I believe, on display. So she always wanted to come back and play it. And, you know, she always tested to make sure it was in tune and stuff, because she does have perfect pitch. So she would be able to tell if it was not in tune. But.
Actually, when I got this clip, I decided there were a few little comments in it that I thought, well, it's better just to have the music. So I cut them out, but I will tell you what they were. One of them was, well, I had perfect pitch, so I knew that it was in tune. And then she said, pretty good tuning.
Yeah, I wanted to get her, it wasn't just her playing, which is, it's great to have that too, but you want to get the stories, you know, she's always got stories for everything. So there's a longer clip on her website too that we have of her playing for about 9 minutes, one of the years she was back. And it's fun to hear, you know, how she got started and the different songs that her husband loved to hear and, you know, that they'd play every night. And it's just, if you want to hear more, you know, head over to our website to check that out too. But it was always fun to just record her while she was around too.
She made a CD with, I don't know how many songs are on there, but it's a whole CD full of her playing her, I think it was her Steinway that she probably did that on. And I've got one of those in my truck. And I know Colleen and I think Kate has one of those too. But if you're going somewhere, it's fun just to pop that in the CD player on the truck and listen to that. It's soothing music, all of it. Yeah. And you know Fran was doing it, so it made it pretty special.
Well, that's a good note to introduce our next music. KHOI Community Radio. We've shared a short tribute to the late Dr. Frances Bartlett Kinney, who you just heard playing her mother's piano. She died at age 102 on Mother's Day 2020, an appropriate time. Kate File, director of the Story City Historical Society, told me she made sure to have the piano tuned each year so that when Dr. Kinney came to Story City on her annual visits, it would be ready for her. The selection you heard is from one of those visits. And thank you, for all of you, for being with us. Mike Jensen, Mayor of Story City, Colleen Taylor, Library Director of the Bertha Bartlett Public Library, and Kate File, Director of the Story City Historical Society. Okay, well, we have a little set. We have a surprise guest. Anna Magnuson came on, and so thank you so much for being here. And about that auction.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. So recently, yes, you know, KHOI hosted a concert featuring the Barn Owl Band as a last hurrah to Paul Nelson. The performance was a great way to reminisce and remember someone who meant so much to our community radio family. And that event also launched an auction that included donations from across the community, as well as treasures from Paul's life. And the auction is ongoing through the middle of October. So we're asking everyone to take a minute to support KHOI by visiting the KHOI Auction House on Facebook, or by bidding on the many pieces of art, decor, and jewelry still available. You can get there with one easy click from our Auction House button on the homepage of our website, which is khoifm.org. And as you know, community radio is a place where all voices are welcome, a place where diversity is celebrated. It's a platform for discussion, a source of information, and a place to make connections. And so with your help, we can continue to be an important resource for news, ideas, conversations, and music. And so I just love, the jewelry is donated from one of our DJs, Stephanie, who has a radio show. And I have a piece of jewelry that I'm wearing right now that I bought from her jewelry place called Silo House. And so I'm going to definitely be bidding on that. But as anyone who knows has been listening to Local Talk, they know I'm not happy. Anna Banana is not happy because somebody keeps outbidding me on two of the items that I want, and they're doing it by $1. So you start bidding, whoever you are out there, outbidding me by $5 or $10, not a dollar. But I am going to get those items. But the more important thing is that everything supports KHOI. And just like this morning, I just so enjoyed listening to Susan. That interview was just absolutely so moving and motivating to me to be able to make a difference in this community, not half as much as the wonderful, amazing philanthropists that you were talking about. But even if I did 1/8 of that wonderful spirit of being committed to the community, I think that's an amazing thing. So thank you so much for that interview. And Gina, it's so nice to meet you. I always listen to you on Wednesdays too because I love that voice.
Thank you very much.
So Susan and Gina, have you guys done any bidding yet? Have you been to the auction house? Because there are some amazing pieces of artwork and jewelry.
I'll have to go and check in again because I went to the Barn Owls band when they had the show on that Sunday. That was really fun. And I did a little bit on Facebook. I like did a little live. And I got a couple items there at the house. But I'll get online, and I did a couple weeks ago, and then I got phone call, came. I have to get back on there.
So now I know it's not you, Gina, who is outbidding me, so that's one down.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, and as guests think about it, I mean, Christmas is coming around, so I'm starting to put together my shopping list. So there's lots of great items out there that could be great holiday gifts and birthday gifts, which is quite good.
Our last guest is Christopher Levi, director of the Boone Community Theater production of Macbeth, as adapted by Drew Zahn.
So we're doing Macbeth. We're opening Macbeth at the Herman Park Pavilion, so kind of Shakespeare in the Park, kind of a common thing to do Shakespeare outside. 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, that Thursday evening, it opens. 7 o'clock Friday, and then 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon, we've got our matinee. A lot of challenges with the outdoor venue, some outside noise, you know, the weather. We were hoping for a little bit warmer, so this will feel a little bit more like October with the mid-50s. But we played with the script a little. Willie didn't seem to mind. It's in public domain, so we were okay there. So we played with the script a little to take out just a couple of scenes that we thought we could do without and also trim down the cast. We have a special treat. The witches, you'll see a little extra. They fill in some of the minor servants. We kind of got that idea from a show that had been performed down in Des Moines some years back. But the witches not only manipulate Macbeth with their prophecies, but they literally get involved as the servants. And so their evil manipulation is even more obvious. So, yeah, we're going to do it tomorrow evening and Friday evening and Saturday at the Herman Park Pavilion, just north of McHose Park, kind of on the south central section of Boone there.
That sounds exciting. Do you, what times are those again? Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday, 7 p.m., Friday, 7 p.m., and Saturday at 1 p.m., a matinee.
And is there a charge for those?
Yes. Oh, should I remember that? Of course I should. Yeah, it's on our website there. So, and you know, getting the tickets on online is available there. Otherwise, you can show up at the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your website?
BooneCommunityTheater.org. And theater is spelled the theatrical way, R-E. BooneCommunityTheater.org.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Well, that sounds exciting. Well, I'm glad you're going to be able to have that show.
Well, thank you.
I hope you get a good audience. I might try and get over there myself.
Yeah, I suppose we're competing with football Friday evening, but if you're not into football, you can enjoy football weather and have some
That's
art.
That's true. Or come on Saturday or Thursday.
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're quite welcome.
How will the audience be spaced out? Will you have, like, how will the audience be seated?
So the pavilion completely covers the audience from any rain, not from wind, but from rain. And there's picnic benches all through there. I think that when the municipal band plays, we get as many as 300 or more under the pavilion. So we'll be spreading the picnic tables out. There'll be spaces between the picnic tables as well for lawn chairs, individual lawn chairs. So the idea is folks will just clump up in their family units and maintain a distance otherwise. So it's kind of a free-form seating. It's not in very defined rows, but, you know, just don't sit near the next family group and you're good.
And will you be encouraging participants to wear masks, or how does that work?
Yes, we are asking participants to wear masks, especially in the front couple of rows, just because you're closer to the actors. The actors won't be wearing masks. We got to be able to project and so forth. But we have been rehearsing with masks, and we're, you know, trying to make sure that we're not any closer than we have to be. But, we, you know, there's a little bit of risk-taking you have to do to live life, but we are asking audience members to wear masks so we don't have the crowd issue with the whole COVID thing. But it's outdoors, it's got a breeze, and there's plenty of room to spread out.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen, and Anna Magnuson. And the other voices you heard were Mike Jensen, Colleen Taylor, Kate File, and Christopher Levi.
You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballads of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was a medley of piano songs played by Francis Bartlett Kinney and Macbeth from the film score by Jed Kurtzel.
So be a part of our community and join KHOI with your donations today. Go to 32auctions.com or just find the auction house button on KHOI's homepage at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what makes KHOIFM possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.